Welcome to the Kelly Cardenas Podcast, where attitude is everything. On today's show, I had the opportunity to get interviewed on the Traveling Optimist podcast with Steve Oddy. This guy is absolutely amazing. Him and I met, and he is one of the most optimistic guys in the entire world. He's constantly wanting to draw out the greatest in every single person. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Make sure that you listen and subscribe to the Traveling Optimist podcast. This guy is incredible. Also, on the horizon, The Hideout is coming. Make sure that you check the website for that. Thank you to all of our sponsors and every single person out there that has been riding with us on this podcast since the beginning. I want to tell you how much I appreciate you. Enjoy the episode and share it with all your friends.
That the magic is never in the method. It's always in the moment. And when we can be present in what it is that we're doing, then, I mean, there's nothing that can compare to that, because there's no one on earth that's named Kelly that has dreads, that went through all that I went through, that is living and with you right now. There's no one else on earth that can have that. And so if I can bring who I uniquely am and present where I am, there's no competition and I don't need to compete with anybody. And I can just be really excited about this moment. And if I win, yay! If in the world's eyes, if I lose, then in my eyes, then I learn. And I learn a lesson of what not to do the next time. So, you know, I think that when we have that type of mindset, and, you know, not just mindset, but heart set, you know, my parents really, really laid into me from a very early age. They poured into me that, you know, those three things: you're awesome, you're beautiful, you can do anything. And then my dad kept saying, you're the greatest, son, you're the greatest, you're the greatest. And then when my mom died, he changed and he said, you're the greatest, so act accordingly. And if all of the people, whether it be listening or watching or you, Steve, or me, if we acted according to our greatness and who we were, can you imagine what companies would do? Could you imagine what individuals would do, what relationships would do? Hey, everybody, this is Kelly Cardenas, and I make people happy. And you're listening to the Traveling Optimist podcast with Steve Oddy.
Greetings, optimists. I hope that life is good for you. Things have been busy and amazing here at Optimist HQ, but whatever you're doing, I hope you're feeling great. Okay, it's that time again for another episode of the Traveling Optimist. So get yourself ready, turn up the volume, and get set for a really inspirational conversation about the life and journey of Kelly Cardenas. I've wanted to get Kelly on the show for a while. I've followed him on the socials and was honoured to guest on his incredible podcast last year. And finally, we were able to align our diaries so I could repay the favour and get him to share his life and experiences with you. Kelly is a true optimist. These foundations are very much laid from a positive upbringing and having incredible parents who consistently reinforced Kelly's life with positive affirmations that have had a profound and beautiful effect on his life, and ones that Kelly is now passing on to his children. So I guess if your parents are going to leave a legacy, it's a pretty good one. Kelly has been featured in Forbes magazine, spoken to thousands of people all over the world about what it takes to be a success and run a successful business. But it's not all been roads paved with gold. There have been failures, a lot of money's been lost down the way, but he was never hindered by the fear of failure. Because failure isn't a word in Kelly's vocab. There's only winning or learning, never failure. So this is Bea and Kelly Cardenas talking about life in the hair industry and life in general and what it takes to live a great life, and that it's okay to also trust your intuition and your faith. And it's a beautiful conversation with a guy who's realizing his dreams. But ultimately, this is a conversation with a wonderful human being whose belief system is unsinkable, who has the heart of a lion and is truly living his best life by making people happy. Okay, let's go. Welcome to the Traveling Optimist podcast, Kelly Cardenas, and welcome to the home of optimism. How are you?
I'm doing amazing, man.
That's awesome. It's so good that you're coming on the show. And I know that we've had some, diaries and things put together, and we've finally got it together, which is fantastic. So I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Now, I've known you for about a year or so, just through sort of social media, LinkedIn and whatever, and seen your posts, and you've got an amazing podcast, which I listened to, and that's kind of what I sort of drew me towards you, I think, at the beginning. You very kindly came on my show. I came on your show last year, which was an incredible experience for me. So thank you so much for that. That was really, truly amazing. And it would be rude not to reciprocate. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, I love what you're doing, Steve. And there's very few people that when you scratch the surface, then you get a chance to see exactly who they are. And there's a lot of people that are showing one thing. And when you scratch the surface, you see another. And you're one of those people that when you scratch the surface, you see something even better. And I thank you for being that in the world. I thank you for this podcast too, because the Traveling Optimist podcast is something that every single person needs to listen to, because we all need more optimism in our lives.
Oh, absolutely. Particularly at the moment. We had an introductory chat before I was a guest on your show, and we had several things in common, didn't we? Now,
yes.
The first one is that we share a love, an affiliation to the old Houston Oilers, American football team.
Yeah.
So this is so cool because there aren't many Oilers fans out there, I don't think. I'll just recap. It was 1979. I was 9 years old. I spent a whole summer in Texas with some family friends of ours that's the story that's linked to Lake and Heath and your dad, I think he was in the Air Force mm-hmm. as well, wasn't he? So anyway,
yeah.
I got taken to the Astrodome and to see the Oilers play a game, which was amazing. And they've been my team like forever. And I lost touch with American football over the years. And then it was only when you were on social media and I saw you had this Oilers hat on and stuff, I'm going, hold on a minute, how did he get hold of that? How can he be an Oilers fan? He's all the way over on the west coast of the States. So what's the link? How did you get to be a fan of the Oilers?
Well, my dad bought me a jacket, or my parents bought me a jacket when I was 6 years old. I still think, Steve, it was because it was on sale because no one liked the Oilers at the time. But it was one of those things that just stuck. My brother loved all Rams. He loved the Dodgers. He loved the Lakers. And so I became an all Houston fan because I wanted to copy my big brother and my hero. And so I fell in love with Earl Campbell and Ken Stabler, and moved on to, you know, Warren Moon and, Hayward Jeffries and Eddie George, Steve McNair. And I'm a Titans fan now. And yeah. So it's funny because I just went to a party the other day and up in LA for the Super Bowl with Lee Steinberg, his party. And I decided to wear my Oilers hat, and everyone at the party was just stopping me because there was a lot of NFL players there. They stopped me and said, hey, you know, about the hat. And it creates a conversation, but it created a lot of pain, in my life because we didn't have very many winning seasons. It created resilience, persistence, perseverance, all those things that you need to be able to have an optimistic type of attitude. It came from the Oilers.
Oh my God. Yeah, you're so right. In fact, that kind of resonates quite well with me because I follow a soccer team here in the UK called Fulham. Okay. They're a London based team. And they've been that this roller coaster ride, you know, for the last 50 years. And you have to be an optimist to be a Fulham supporter. And it's the same with Oilers, obviously. And actually, it was only since knowing you that I realized then that the franchise from Houston had moved to Tennessee. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So there's
very few people, Steve, that stayed with the team. And, I like to say that I'm the only one left in this nation.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to have a fellow Oilers fan. And for those of you out there, you can apply to our fan club.
Yes.
But you have to apply and you have to be accepted before you can be a true fan.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, yes, we should give out that we should start this club immediately.
Oh, I love it, man. I've actually got an old Oilers helmet that's signed by Earl Campbell. I gave it to my son. My son is now an Oilers fan and he wears Oilers gear, hats and stuff like that. And we're huge Tennessee Titans fans. And, Jamie Robinson, if you're listening, absolutely love you. I love you. What your family has done for the Titans. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about your early life, because part of our connection as well is that we have a connection with the United States Air Force. in a very, very close family friend of ours who are like their aunt and uncle kind of link, but they're friends. So they're not quite family, but they really should be for me. But it was your father who was in the Air Force, and he was based over in the UK, wasn't he?
Absolutely. He was based in Lakenheath, and that's where I was born. And so it made me seem a little bit more mysterious to all my friends, because I said that I was born in England, and they were like, whoa, because I mean, Steve, I wanted to be your friend right away when I heard you were from Europe. And, you know, European people are so much cooler than anybody else. And, but I didn't get the cool accent. I was there for about 2.5 years, but it really, that military life really shaped who I was, because you really had to be optimistic, because you were moving every 2 to 3 years. You're having to make new friends, and you got to be who you wanted to be as opposed to who people thought you were. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was one of the greatest things for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, you aren't American. You are actually English.
Well, I love that, man. I never went after my dual citizenship, which I still should. But, you know, I love it, man. I claim it. Absolutely. Oh, 100%.
So you should do that. Absolutely. So yeah, next, I know that this could be in the pipeline. And if your career goes in the direction that we know it's going to go, hopefully you might be coming over to the UK, and then we can have a couple of beers, and I'll take you over to Lakenheath and stuff. Excellent. So early life, you were so born in the UK, dad was in the Air Force. I know he's had a massive impact on your life, hasn't he?
He's huge. You know, my pop was my, you know, I said my brother was my hero, but my original hero was my pop. And, you know, our relationship was so incredible. There was two sides to him. You know, there was dad when I was growing up, and he's pretty strict and strong, and, you know, then there was pops, and, pops, you know, he really, I started to understand who dad was through pops. Pops helped me to understand, why he was as strict as he was. I mean, he grew up in a very small mining town, didn't have hot running water until he was 13 years old. And he was only 68. He passed away December 19th. And, you know, he was only 68 years old. So when he was 13, there was hot running water in other houses, but there wasn't in his. And they heated up water on a wood burning stove and put it in a galvanized steel bucket. And his six siblings would bathe in this. And, you know, it was a different type of life. And that's why, you know, he was a father at 19 years old, and he was in the military at that time, traveling around the world, and he was just kind of making his way. So for me as a kid coming into the world, here was this kid that was raising kids and doing the best with what he could, with what he had. I didn't understand that as a kid. I saw it as strict. I saw it as, oh, you're being mean. But then as pops and I, our relationship flourished and became best friends and talked every single day. And he was the most encouraging man that I've ever been around. I started to understand the context, you know, the context of where, what made up that dad that I saw. And, you know, he absolutely is a hero of mine. One of the most serving, loving, you know, peaceful men that I've ever met. And, you know, his legacy lives on, man. And I see it in my kids. I see it in my brothers. I see it all over the world in every single person that he's touched.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. That is amazing. And yeah, it sounds as though he was came from the same sort of class as my dad a little bit, you know, really just a very giving person who'd put everybody else ahead of himself kind of thing.
Yeah. He had a will to win like no one I've ever seen.
Oh, that's
amazing. He was, you know, when I say he was, I like to say he is. Mm-hmm. He told me in his last couple of days that, you know, he was going to be with me always. He would always be in my heart. And he was an amazing man. He is an amazing man. And to see the example that he set and the love that that he poured out into every single person around him, I've just never seen anything like it. And, you know, he was a guy that if you complimented him on something, he would give it to you. If you complimented him on a pair of shoes, he'd take the shoes off and give them to you. And every person that came in contact with him was impacted in such a positive way, you know. And people ask me about my relationship with him, and I just say it just one word: it was complete. You know, although it, you know, even now I get choked up when I talk about him. And I wish that I could spend more time with him, but I knew it was time for him to go home.
Yeah.
I knew it was time for his body to be whole and for him to be with my mama. And now he's dancing in heaven with Jesus. So.
I can empathize with your feelings and understand where you're coming from completely. And I think that's a great thing about having great dads is that they lay the foundations for you, but you don't really know it until you're a bit older. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
They really do. They really do. No, that's lovely. And I know that obviously that positive influence as well. But then you had your mom as well in at home and stuff. And I know all moms have a really positive influence on their kids too, right?
Absolutely. My mom was a prayer warrior. She was the one where, you know, when I say it, two different guys, right? Dad and pops. And dad was, you know, mow the lawn, do this, do that. And he was a drill sergeant. My mom was just a prayer warrior. She was praying us up all the time. You know, I learned that no matter what you do, as long as you cover it in prayer, things will turn out okay. Mm-hmm. And she made us feel normal, you know? And when I say normal, I don't think that there's any, you know, standard in life or in, you know, society or anything like that. But, you know, we didn't have much money, but we didn't feel broke. Mm-hmm. We didn't have many things, but we didn't feel like we were less than. She always made it seem like, you know, it was so normal for us to live in a one bedroom apartment with five people. It was so normal for her to be able to take a pair of socks, sew them together, and that become our baseball. It was so normal for us to walk, a mile and a half in sixth grade each way to the bus stop, and you know, sometimes not have our mom home until 8 o'clock at night. Because she was working and the only breadwinner in the family, she made it normal and she created joy. And she always told me to never grow weary in doing good works, that no matter what you were doing, if it was doing the right thing, even if you didn't get the result, it didn't matter. And it transfers into today, right? You know, and in the social media time, we did make a post and we think, we gauge that based off the likes or the loves or the comments or whatever it was. And my mom, I had no idea, but she was preparing me for it. She was telling me that I was awesome and to disconnect myself from my accomplishments and just to accept my greatness. And that would attract all the greatness into my life. And that part was such a foundational building block for me to really give me wings to go out and realize that anything was possible in this world as long as I was willing to do the work.
Yeah, absolutely. So what part of America were they both from?
Utah.
Okay. So that's sort of Midwest.
I mean, it's on the Western Midwest. It's super white. Utah, I mean, it's a beautiful place. Absolutely beautiful place. We have a home there, now in Park City. And that's where we did our interview from, where we were on the show.
Yeah.
And, it's right above Nevada.
Oh, okay.
Right below Idaho. So not quite Midwest, still kind of West Coast, but
yeah.
Absolutely beautiful place.
Oh, nice. That's brilliant. Beautiful. Yeah. And actually, yeah. I mean, I see the photographs of where you take, you know, those mountains in the background of where you live. It's so, so incredible. And then on another time, the next week, you'll be down and you've got the beach and you've got the Pacific Ocean in front of you. It's like you live the best life. It's really amazing. So. Tell me a little bit more about growing up, school, your career, you know, just so that everybody knows, Kelly's got some amazing dreads. I want to know the background to that. What's the story for that? So first of all, let's start at the beginning. What career-wise, where did you go from school? What happened?
Well, I think when you said upbringing, school, and then career, I always blur the lines with all of them. And, you know, I never really knew what I was going to do. I thought that I was going to go in the military. That's what my dad did. When I was in school, my friends and I that were military kids, we would talk about it, that we were just going to go into the military like our dad. And I remember one time, my dad bought dog clippers because he needed to shave the dog. He wanted to save money. And this was dad at the time. This was not pops. But dad was like, I ain't shaving no, this is how he would talk. He'd be like, I ain't shaving no dog. Like, I ain't taking him to the groomer. That I ain't going to spend any money. So he went and got clippers and told us, you know, go shave the dog. And so we tried it and we didn't chain the dog up and it ran away. The clippers turned on and, you know, so we had these clippers and we didn't do anything with them. A couple years later, we actually, I needed a haircut. I was either get one by my mom, who was going to give me kind of, you know, the finger thick haircut all over the top of the head, or here's my brother who's cool. And he's the quarterback of the team, you know, in football and all this stuff. And he says, I can do it. And he takes me in the bathroom and, you know, gives me a haircut and with these clippers. And it really turned a light bulb on, saying that, you know, we didn't have the money to be able to go to the barbershop or to the salon. So we could do it ourselves. And I remember trying it one time on my friend, Will, and he's my best friend to this day from fourth grade. And I tried it and it didn't work out very well. But what my mom had always taught me was this optimistic attitude of like, well, shit, like it didn't work out. Like maybe you should try it again. Or, you know, if you work at it a little bit longer, you'll get better at it. Mm. And so I tried it again. And, you know, it was just this thing, this absolute love for people that I had. And I had no idea that hair would be the conduit to that. So I went to hair school right after high school. I didn't have any thought of it. I was just cutting all my friends in high school in basketball and football. And my mom asked me, why don't you go to school for that? And so I went and I asked them about the program and they said it would be 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for 10 months. And I thought, you're crazy. That's another year of school. Like I'm going to go to community college, take two classes, party with my friends. And I remember on the way home, God was very strong with me. And he asked me, what are you going to have to show after 2 years of community college? And I said, nothing. And he said, what are you going to have to, or 10 months of community college? I said, nothing. And he said, what about 10 months of hair school? And I said, well, at least I'll have a license. And he said, that's what you need to do. And so I've just been growing up in a military family, you never really questioned authority. So when God told me to do it, I just said, okay. And I signed up. And it's been amazing because I don't believe that it was any about my ability, but my availability to do whatever God told me to do and stay obedient, which he calls us to. And, you know, I stayed obedient and he just kept bringing people into my life and, you know, really shaped me through three things that, you know, have been helped me to be successful in every single thing that I've done. Not to say that I haven't failed, because I failed hugely, lost tons of money, closed more companies than I've opened, you know, all these things, but it was these three principles. Number one, be kind, like contribute to every single person and never be indebted to anybody. Number two, just make a lot of friends. And number three, stay really curious. You know what I mean? Stay curious about other people and who they are. And that has really proved well. And when I say I've become successful in every single thing that I did, it means that I really enjoyed the time I was present and I was able to take something from it. That's what I think success is.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so you say you lost a lot of money, or, you know, a ton of money or whatever. tell me about that. What happened?
Well, which time, you know, I mean, I've lost tons. I mean, I've left millions of dollars on the table at times. You know, I've had businesses close, but it's one of those things, like it goes back to my mom's side of like, shit, like, you know, during the pandemic, I mean, when the pandemic hit, it was March 16th. I remember, I think it was March 14th. I had the most famous meeting of my life because I sat down with all my leaders and I was like, look, guys, I've been through the 2008 crash. I've been through 9/11. This stuff is fine. Everything's going to be cool. A couple of days and then everything will be good. And then 2 days later, you know, our company was doing right around $3.5 million a year in revenue. And, you know, it just bang gone, it poof in one day. Like, you know, and it's one of those things where it went back again to what my parents taught me, like you're not your accomplishments, right? So I had lived in a one bedroom apartment with five people. So, you know, like when it was nice to have that type of revenue a year, but, you know, when it's gone, if I need to go to a one bedroom apartment, luckily, I'm very blessed and, you know, very, very blessed and God has taken care of us. And, you know, I didn't have to go back to that. He had propped us up and, you know, but there's been times where I've, you know, invested. I did a salon down in San Diego and I thought it was great. And I remember asking my brother about it and he's like, what's the worst you can do? And I was like, lose the money that I invest. And he's like, so what? Try it. And I did, you know, put it in, put the money in. Probably, I say that I probably invested about $150,000 in that. And 2-3 years later, it wasn't working. So we moved on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had my first marriage. It cost me a little over $100,000. That didn't work. You know, so for me, it's, I think that I failed more than I succeeded. But it's taught me a ton of lessons. It's been the best graduate's degree. And I believe I have a doctorate degree in lessons. Right. And so, but that way it creates a situation where my brother called me or talked to me the other day. We were at lunch, or it was between lunch and it was brunch. And he told me about an idea for a company. And I said, let's go. And, you know, 3-4 weeks later, we just formed another company and we're going to go at it. And, you know, if it works, we'll keep doing it. And if it doesn't, shit, maybe we weren't supposed to do it. So That's the way I've had my mentality. And, you know, being an entrepreneur for quite some time, about 15, 16 years, you know, I'm willing to bet on myself, which I think is the best bet I can ever make.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think also, I mean, I've fallen into the trap when I first started in business in terms of that fear of failures. It was a massive burden, actually. And actually, it's very restrictive, isn't it? Do you come Absolutely. Across people when you're doing all of your speaking gigs and stuff, and you know, those business owners are in the audience, and I've been in those audiences, you know, and I wish I could have, if I was going to go back in time, I'd try and sort of alleviate that fear of failure and just go for it. How do you sort of correct people with that sort of mindset?
Well, I think that first of all, you have to lay the foundation, right? And so most of the time, fear comes from just false evidence, right? The acronym for it, false evidence appearing real. And, you know, I know that that part is cliche, but I think that fear comes from misinformation. And for me, it was just from very early on, and I had no idea that this was happening. But I attribute it to my parents. My mom would wake me up every day and tell me I was awesome, scratch my back, tell me I was awesome, tell me I was disconnected from my accomplishments, like I said earlier, that I needed to accept, as opposed to try and accomplish success, just simply accept my greatness. So my grades weren't me. I was awesome, even if I got a B, C, D, E, F, whatever, G, anything. I was awesome. Number two, she told me that I was beautiful and never to compare myself to anyone. See, every audience that I go and when I get to speak to the Fortune 500 companies or the companies all over the world, when I sit down, all I ask for is access to the people, right? Because they think that I'm going to bring some method that's going to be the magic bullet. And I can tell you there's no magic bullet out there. But what I can tell you is when I have access to the people and I help them to understand, number one, that they're awesome. Right? Disconnect themselves from their accomplishments. So if they mess up at their job, that doesn't mean that they're awful. They're still awesome. They just happen to make a mistake, but you either win or you learn. And so if we learn the lesson, then we can create the next procedure as we move forward. The number two is just that you're beautiful. Don't compare yourself to anybody. Don't even compare yourself to yourself yesterday, because yourself presently today is who you're supposed to be, and you're exactly where you need to be at the exact right time. And so when a person feels that, they feel free. The weight is off their shoulders. I watch so many people in the audiences, so many people in companies that are carrying so much on their shoulders that they're not designed to carry. And that's a thing in America, what we call stress. Yeah. And the only reason why any of you are feeling stress is because you're carrying something you're not designed to carry. And so the only thing that we're designed to carry is the present moment, to realize that we are absolutely beautiful and that we are made unique for a purpose. And it's right now, this exact instant. And even if you've messed up, even if you're in the midst of a divorce, or you just lost your job or did something awful, guess what? You're supposed to be here right now, because there's a lesson and there's beauty in it, and there's beauty in that present. And the last thing that my parents would tell me was that I could do anything that I put my mind to. But just because I could do it didn't make it right. And so it helped me to realize that I needed to lock into my purpose, my unique purpose of who I was and who I was built to be. And when I'm flowing in that, I think of the hip hop song, no matter how hard you try, you can't stop me now. Like, there's no way to stop this thing. There's no way to, if a oak tree seed is planted, it's watered, and you know, it's in the midst of growth. There is no way to stop that thing from growing unless you dig it completely out of the ground. But most people can't see it in the ground until it takes root. And by the time it takes root, it's very, very hard to get out. Like, I'm telling you, once you get to a point where you realize you're awesome, that you're beautiful, and that you could do anything, but it doesn't mean that you should be doing it unless it's your purpose. When you're in that place, and every employee in the company is in that place, now they're giving their best. They're owning the vision of the company as opposed to simply renting it.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you qualified as somebody to style and cut hair and things, what did you do? Did you start up on your own? Did you go into somebody else's salon and learn your trade and get some experience? What was the deal?
Well, it was a day when, you know, I was taught from my dad at an early age in the military side. He always told me, you know, don't try and do your own thing. Like, if I was going to start a phone company, I wouldn't be like Kelly's Phone Company. If I wanted to be in that realm, or when I say start a phone company, if I wanted to be in the telecommunications industry, I wouldn't start Kelly's Phone Company because no one would trust it. I would go to AT&T or T-Mobile, and I'd want to be the best person there, and I would want to be the guy for the guy. That's the way my mind worked. So when I got into the industry, I wanted to find the guy, and I found the guy. And then I followed him for 2.5 years, passed him my card, was in the front row of every show that he was at all over the country. And I kept telling him, my name is Kelly Cardenas. My name is Kelly Cardenas. My name is Kelly Cardenas. Until one day I went to shake his hand and give him a card. And he said, you're Kelly Cardenas. And I said, yes, how'd you know? And he's like, well, you've just been following me for 2.5 years. And then, you know, I stayed at him until he gave me a job. And he gave me a job, and I just got to be right by his side. And anything that he did, I wanted to be close to it. And I made a lot of mistakes, but you know what? I wasn't charging on my own credit card. I was borrowing the credibility of one of the most famous hairdressers that's ever been. And so when I got a chance to do that and travel around the world and be around, I wasn't working off my own reputation. I was working off of his reputation. And so I got a chance to be able to learn from the absolute best. And some people were like, you know, because I'm in Memphis, Tennessee, when I was working there, while I was traveling around following him, I started to make quite a bit of money for a 21-year-old. And I had to give up a lot of that money to go and work for him. And people were like, why would you take a pay cut? And I said, guys, no matter what it is, I have the best education. I'm going to the Harvard. Like, I'm going to the Harvard of my industry with the person, the guy.
Who was the guy?
And his name is Robert Cromings. So okay. the lineage is Paul Mitchell, who started the hair care company. So there was Paul Mitchell. There was a woman named Jean Bra. So Paul Mitchell had a stage partner named Jean Bra, and Jean Bra had a partner named Robert Cromings, and Robert Cromings was my mentor. Ah. So I was that close to the man, Paul Mitchell. So, you know, for me, it was the greatest education that you could ever have. I didn't care how much I was getting paid. It didn't matter. It was just being around the people, the exposure, and it was the greatest springboard in the entire world. And I'm indebted to, you know, to their family, to the Cromings family for the rest of my life. And they don't hold that over me, but I'm just so grateful, and I want to honor them in every single way that I can.
That's amazing. So, okay, let's just explore that a little bit more, because I'm interested. The overriding theme so far is that you trust your intuition. You trust your gut instinct a lot, don't you? And I want to know what made you decide to go and speak to Robert and say and introduce yourself. What was the thought behind that?
Well, I thought that, you know, the way that my parents raised me, again, I'm awesome. I'm beautiful. I could do anything, right? Yeah. My dad would tell me every single day that I was the greatest, and he would tell me to act according to that greatness. So for me, I thought, like, my mom's mentality, shit, he's what, like, if I ask him to be my friend and he says no, he's already not my friend anyway. So what's the worst thing that could happen? Nothing. I'm already living in the worst case scenario. And I think that most people don't realize that, okay, what if I go after my dream and I fail? Well, you already don't have your dream anyway. So you're living in the worst possible scenario in that scenario. So why not go for it? Why not try it out? And if it doesn't work, then shit, move on. If it does work, write it down, systemize it, and then continue to do that thing. And you can build on it over and over and over again. And what I've told people is I said, honestly, if you give me enough tries, I can do it. no matter what it is. I don't care if it's digging ditches, building houses, painting cars, whatever it is. If I try enough, I can do it. And it was the same thing with the podcast, Steve. Like when I started off, people were like, well, there's a system and you have to do these things. You have to do that. And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, let me just try it out. And so I tried it out. We got some great write-ups and some great magazines that, you know, when the person read the magazine, they were like, oh, wow, that means it's credible. And I was thinking it's already credible because my mom said that I was awesome. My mom said I was beautiful. My mom said I could do anything. So the fact that these guys wrote about it, I'm glad that it makes you feel better, but I already felt that way. And so, and if it doesn't, you know what, we'll shift it, we'll move it, and we'll have fun with it. But I think that so many times we try and systemize things, but and when you said that I lock into my gut intuition, I know the name of my gut. The name of my gut is Jesus. And, you know, that was something that I locked into very early on. And, it's proved to be really, work out really well. My relationship with him, he tells me to do something. I'm not always right away because I question him a lot and I argue with him a lot. He's never led me wrong. He's never late. He's always seldom early. And Steve, he is always right on time.
I love that. I love that. So tell me about your hair. What's the story?
It happened on accident, man. I had my hair permed on pipe cleaners, little wires, because I wanted my hair to be an afro like the singer Maxwell. And he was my favorite singer at the time, and all the ladies loved him. And I thought that if I had the perm, then all the ladies would love me too. But I did the perm. I didn't look like Maxwell at all. and I was on a flight to China. I was going over there to do some education and speak over there. And that's a long flight. So I got tired and I was rubbing my head and it started to knot up. And I thought, man, I don't want dreads, because most white guys with dreads, then they got like three of them. And, you see the guys walking down the street, especially, you know, that maybe are on the street and they have like one off the side of their head. And I thought, if I'm going to have them, I want them to be skinny. And if they ever get, big doo-doo kind of locks, then I want to cut them off. And again, it just happened by accident. And, it was funny because then people were like, oh, it's your identity. You can never cut them off. And I was like, in my heart, I know that I'm not my hair. I know that I'm not my logo. I know that I'm not how much I make a year or whatever it is. I know that I was the same person without the dreads, with them, all those things. So I love them. My kids, it's all they know. My wife likes them and she tells me not to cut them off. And I've got a weird shaped head, Steve. So I think I might keep them for a while.
I think it looks cool, man. I really do. And it looks great. And I love it that you've incorporated it into your brand as well. So that is superb. So you met your first wife. That didn't go quite according to plan. So how did you meet Brooklyn?
Well, Brooklyn and I worked together. So we worked together at the Mandalay Bay. I had, came on with the company that I talked about with Robert Cromie Salon in San Diego. I worked there for about 2.5 years and I got promoted to the director of the salon. I started off as an assistant at minimum wage and got promoted to one of the directors of the location. And then they sent me out to Las Vegas to the Mandalay Bay when Mandalay Bay was opening, and we were opening a salon in it. And, I became the director there, and then we ended up meeting in the salon, but we worked together for 3.5 years and were friends, being able to see each other in our native environments before we ever connected. And I left that company. And so when I left, then we actually started dating afterwards.
So what did she think of you when, she first started work? What was that all about?
She said she didn't like me. I still think that she was, like the little girls that are mean to a boy, I think it's because you like them. But she says she was adamant that she didn't like me. But also too, I was her boss. I had moved across the country, left my family, left my money for this job. She got the job. She lived in the town, and she didn't know who Robert was. I did. And so for me, I was this, like almost militaristic guy that was like, if you're coming into this company, you got to believe in what we're doing. We're going, this culture is so strong and this is what we're going to do. And she was like, yay, I got a job. And, now it's crazy because she's now one of the top educators for Paul Mitchell. And, and it's one of those things where, again, you don't know how God is blessing you right now. You don't know the seeds that he's planted, but you're going to maybe you plant someone else waters, but God will bring the increase, but he only brings it at the time that you need it. And I had no idea. And so my dad told me that you never know where someone's from. You never know where they're going. You never know where you'll meet up with them again. So make friends out of everyone. And I'm so glad that I made friends with my wife, because she has changed everything about my existence.
So what brought her? So she obviously interviewed for the Mandalay. Where was she working before? Because these thin threads, I love them, because so I met my wife at work, and she didn't like me either when she first started. She thought I was really overconfident and a little bit arrogant. And I thought, I think it's the same,
man. She, Brooklyn went to hair school there in Las Vegas, and she needed a job. Yeah. And so her friend said, hey, why don't you check out this one? And she happened upon it. Well, you can imagine the difference between the two. Here I am, that I followed Robert around the country for 2.5 years. Then I give up my family, where I live, my money, all this stuff, moved to San Diego. Then they moved me to Las Vegas and I'm in. And then here's a person that's like, I need a job. Yeah. And, you know, I think that she probably thought I was arrogant too, because of the, you know, the way that I went about things, you know. And I just say that she still loved me. She was still looking at me. She was still checking me out.
You know, she was definitely, absolutely, 100%. She might deny it, but she can't deny it. It's untrue. If she denies it, I can understand. Obviously, you're a good looking guy, so it was inevitable, wasn't it? You know what I mean?
When you meet her, Steve, she is just such a joy. She's amazing. And people are like, why did it take you 3.5 years? And I was like, I honestly look back at it, and I'm so glad that we had the friendship that we did, because I got to see her for who she was as opposed to who she was trying to be. And, you know, she's helped me to be able to learn what love is.
Yeah, absolutely. And the rest is history, as they say, because obviously you guys got married. You're married?
Yes. 14, yeah. Okay. Coming up on 14. This is 14 years this year. So
14. Wow. Amazing. Good stuff. And you have a couple of kids as well. So
yes, Maddox and McKenna.
It's all going really well, isn't it? And obviously, I know that I've met Maddox, I think, haven't I, or McKenna? I think it was Maddox. Yeah. Helping you with your podcast, I've noticed.
Yeah, yeah.
He does some of the production.
Producer. Yeah,
so that's amazing.
He brought his little guys over the other day, and he loves helping me put it together. And you know, when he helps me, then I ask him, "Do you want to be the executive producer?" And he says yes. And you know, it's so funny, because one of his friends was like, what is an executive producer? And my son looked around and then he just made something up. And that's what I've done my entire life. Like, you know, I wanted to start a company. Most people are like, how do you start a business? I was like, I don't know. I'll make it up. And we made it up. And as you make it up, you try something. If it works, write it down, right? Because our list of screw-ups is our procedures. And that's what most companies don't realize, is that they're so freaked out on the procedures or the processes, and the people are in the company too, because they're like, oh my gosh, the procedures. And guys, ease up a little bit, because your procedures are nothing more than a list of your screw-ups. Someone else screwed up before, they wrote it down, and they said, hey, I don't want you to do this. This gives freedom to people in what it is that they're doing.
Absolutely. So your podcast is amazing, by the way, and you have some incredible guests, you're a very accomplished host. I mean, you really are, and you come across with such energy, and the questions that you ask your guests are really great, because I tell you what I've realized is that you ask questions that really make them think. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes people come on a podcast and they're possibly doing a circuit of podcasts, and it's interviews and it's all standard answers, blah, blah, blah. Whereas the questions that you ask are really kind of slightly, they've come at a different angle, and it almost puts them off guard a little bit, doesn't it? Because actually they've got to then kind of think about their answer. And that's where the gold lies, isn't it, really, with podcasts and, you know, the insight that these people have. Because sometimes I found that guests can be slightly guarded. Little bit guard, you know, in terms of their answers, but you just want them to relax and just, you know, give out some of that stuff that they know, but it's sometimes very difficult to draw out of them. But you draw it out of people, I found.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
No, it's fantastic. And your energy is infectious, by the way, I have to say. And that's something that comes across so great on the podcast. Just remind the listeners what your podcast is called again.
It's called the Kelly Cardenas Podcast. And it's based, the premise is attitude determines altitude. And it's funny because most people, like even my neighbor, I was talking with him. He's a really great guy. And he said, you know, I just really need to prepare for the podcast. And I said, you don't need to prepare for the podcast. What I want you to do is bring yourself. And because what I want to do is I want to take great people who happen to do great things. And I want to talk about who they are as opposed to what they do. And, Steve, it's funny that you say that about the podcast. And I really, really, really appreciate you saying it, because my dad started at the very beginning. My pop was telling me, he said, you know, Kelly, when you do this, man, and you have people on, make sure it's about them. Make sure that you serve them. It's not about you. And, allow them to talk, allow them to tell their stories and be present with them. And a little secret here, Steve, I've never written down a question. So when you do listen to the podcast, I've never written down a question. The only thing that I prepare for is being present. And so I'm sitting with them, we're having a conversation, and I draw off of where they're at, and we move based off of where they are. Some people, when I first started the podcast, then they said, you know, you need to have this deck of questions, or you need to have all the stuff. And, you know, again, maybe I will, maybe I won't. But, it's worked out well.
Oh, it has. Absolutely. And this is where you and I are slightly poles apart. I just don't have that confidence to be able to do that. So I've got this list of prep.
Well, I love it. I love it because it's you. That when we got a chance to spend time and you were on the show, your preparation is unmatched. My preparation, and this is what the thing my dad, I told him, I was like, man, I'm kind of new with this thing, you know, with podcasting, because it's been about 2 years. And he said, son, you aren't new with it, because in the professional beauty industry, I had a podcast every 45 minutes that sat in my chair, and I had to ask people questions. Yeah. So God had been preparing me. He had been planting that seed and setting me up. And I've been speaking to audiences all over the world for the last 29 years. So now getting into this realm, he was like, you aren't starting, son. We've just shifted lanes a little bit. Mm. And so that part, that preparation, I remember, if you don't mind me telling this story, I was in Austin, and I was just about to go on stage, and they asked me about, you know, do you have everything written down that you're going to say? Because we need it. We need to know what it is. And I was like, wow. And so I stepped back and I called my pop, and he said, son, they may think that you needed to prepare for this speech or the talk that you're doing, but you've been preparing for the last, at the time, it was 19 years. And he said, so today, speak from your heart and speak from your experience. And I think that that's what people need more of, as opposed to a presentation, opposed to the methods. I think that they need the person who's there. And that's what really, truly connects with the audience.
Oh, yeah, totally. So how does that work for you? Before you're going on the stage, what are you thinking? How are you feeling?
I'm praying a lot. I swear, I pray right up until the time I go on. Every time, like I remember I was speaking to an audience about 2,500, and right before I'm about to walk on, my pop sends me a text message. I run to the tech guy. I said, I screenshotted it. I handed it to him. I said, can you add this into my slides? Because my dad was telling me at the time, he said, you know, this audience, like, walk into it. You're the greatness, accept the greatness right now, accept the audience. The audience is prepared, and you're not a leader. You're a follower of Jesus. And so he's already prepared the audience. He brought the people, he made you, and he made you for this moment. So walk into it. Mm. And, you know, a lot of times, Steve, God will switch what I'm about to say. And, what it does is it helps me to realize that the magic is never in the method. It's always in the moment. And when we can be present in what it is that we're doing, then, I mean, there's nothing that can compare to that, because there's no one on earth that's named Kelly that has dreads, that went through all that I went through, that is living and with you right now. There's no one else on earth that can have that. And so if I can bring who I uniquely am and present where I am, there's no competition, and I don't need to compete with anybody. And I can just be really excited about this moment. And if I win, yay! If in the world's eyes, if I lose, then in my eyes, then I learn a lesson of what not to do the next time. So You know, it just, it, I think that when we have that type of mindset, and, you know, not just mindset, but heart set, you know, my parents really, really laid into me, from a very early age, they poured into me that, you know, those three things, you're awesome, you're beautiful, you can do anything. And then my dad kept saying, you're the greatest, son, you're the greatest, you're the greatest. And then when my mom died, it changed and he said, you're the greatest, so act accordingly. And if all of the people, whether it be listening or watching or you, Steve, or me, if we acted according to our greatness and who we were, can you imagine what companies would do? Could you imagine what individuals would do, what relationships would do?
Yeah.
Raising
the bar. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, no, totally. So I was just thinking about that as well, because, you know, podcasting actually is a very natural thing for you to do, because I'm thinking, I'm sort of envisaging you with somebody in a chair and you're doing their hair, you're cutting their hair. And it's almost like a mini podcast, isn't it? Every appointment is almost like a mini podcast because you're talking about their lives, what's going on and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? So it's like you've been doing that. You've been doing mini podcasts for your whole career almost until, and then you set it up with a microphone and recording, and now it's awesome.
Well, and you think about this, Steve, like I always think of volume, right? And, you know, I tell the story about when I was growing up as a kid, my dad, you know, took a millionaire tapes. And, you know, we had this millionaire course that we had to listen to, and he drilled a hole through our walls and we had to listen to it 8 to 10 hours a day while we slept. He put a headphone in our pillow. And for 8 to 10 hours a day, for 2 years, I listened to self-help tapes and how to motivate yourself and all these things. Nice. So if you look at the math, if you just look at the math on this, 8 to 10 hours a day, but let's round it to 10. 10 hours a day, 7 days a week is 70 hours. 70 hours times 50 weeks in a year is 3,500. 3,500 hours times two is 7,000. So by the time I was in sixth grade, I had 7,000 hours of positive reinforcement and how to be able to work your mind like a millionaire. So you can imagine if you did that, if you dedicated 1 hour to personal development per day, that would be 7 days a week would be 7 hours. That would be 350 a year. And in 2 years, you would have 700. It would take you 20 years of 1 hour a day to be able to get to where the amount of information that I got by the time I was in sixth grade. And I'm not saying that I'm better. I'm just saying the amount of volume. So with the amount of volume, not only in the professional beauty industry, as far as like each chair, but also the amount of volume that I had when at my height, I was doing anywhere from 23 to 25 guests a day. Mm. So with 25 guests a day, most hairdressers do 4 to 5 a day. I was doing 25. So if you do 4 to 5 a day in a week's time, I was doing your work in 1 day. So that means that I was doing 5 weeks worth of work for your 1 week, meaning that for every 1 year that a normal hairdresser was working, I was working 5. So if they worked 5 years, I was working 25 years. So I want you to realize no matter what you're doing, the more volume you get, the better off you're going to be at it. That's the reason why I think speed to market is so important in any industry. Just do it over and over. The opportunities. When I started speaking, Steve, I was so scared. I was scared of speaking in front of an audience. You know what I did? I volunteered every single week at a beauty school and I spoke and I got up in front of an audience and I was absolutely horrible. But I just did it over and over and over and over and over again. And when you do that, it's not about being good. It's just about getting the volume and getting the repetition in, and then you learn. And yeah, the more opportunity that you can have, I believe the more optimistic you'll become.
Oh, absolutely. You know me, I'm all for optimism. Absolutely. It is. The more you do it, the better you become. Who would you like most on your podcast?
Whew, that's a good one, man. For my son, I would love to have Derrick Henry, the running back for the Tennessee Titans, because my son is a big fan. My daughter, I'd like to have Finn Wolfhard. He's from Stranger Things.
Oh,
Let me see. I'm trying to think for me. That's a great question, Steve. You stumped me a little bit. I would love to have Maxwell, the singer, because I followed his career even when he wasn't the most popular. He's not the guy who has all the hits, but he is the guy who is the soundtrack to my life. And so Maxwell, if you're out there, holler at your boy, because I think we would have a great time.
Yeah, come on, Maxwell, you got to do it. Let's see if we can get you hooked up. What's the favorite knowledge bomb from your podcast that you've ever heard?
I think yesterday there was a guy named Chandler Corazine. He was absolute fire, and he said, "Get away, get small to get big." And most people don't take the time to get quiet, to get really, really small and think about where you're at, to then walk back in to the greatness that you have. Mm. And that was a huge one for me. I mean, he blew me away with that phrase.
That's really cool. I love that.
I tell you, Steve, honestly, almost every single podcast, and this, I swear to you, almost every, and including yours, when I get off the podcast with someone, I come home to my wife and I'm like, "Holy cow, you won't believe what just happened. This was amazing." She's like, "But how could everyone be the greatest?" And I was like, "But this one just happened." And I tell you, the stories are ridiculous. You know, I mean, the stories of people are ridiculous, especially like you said, when you get them outside of their realm, as opposed to what they do, who they are. It's incredible. And I realize that they all have the exact same thing in common. They all have great attitudes. They all have phenomenal work ethic, and they're all people who breathe air. And if they breathe air and I breathe that same air, there's an opportunity to be able to see what they do and experience it. That's where that curiosity comes in.
Yeah, no, it is great. And I have to say, it's a huge honor, really, as a podcast host, that people share that information with me. And I'm not coming from the lofty heights that you are, even though you're very humble, success wise, it's just incredible. I just don't get it. But you mentioned Maxwell, because I mean, I love music, right? One of my first album that I ever bought was Soft Cell, Nonstop Erotic Cabaret. So that was the whole Tainted Love thing. And I'm a bit of an 80s guy, really, when it comes to music. I feel that was the best decade for music. And my dad thought the 60s and 50s were the best decade. It depends where you are as a teenager or whatever. But I actually do believe the 80s was the best decade. And I always remember, I don't know, I think I was 15, and I went to Texas for a summer. And I stayed over at one of my auntie's friend's house, and they had like three boys, and they were playing this. Well, first of all, they never went to sleep without having music playing, and that was really bizarre for me. An English boy, and they had this great big hi-fi set in the room, and it was just nonstop banging Kiss music, right? You know. The band Kiss, never heard of them before in my life. And I looked at the album cover, and it's got these guys with makeup and lightning, you know, painted on their cheeks or whatever. And I had this whole night full of Kiss. And from then on, I'd just been put off Kiss for my whole life, actually. But I just wondered if there was any songs that you listened or that you might listen to on the radio that come on the radio or whatever, and you think, "Oh my God, that reminds me of that time."
It's my whole entire life, man. I'm thinking about right now, De La Soul, and when you said, "Who would you like on the podcast?" I mean, it would be Maxwell and De La Soul would be right there. They're a soundtrack to my life, and I remember, you know, listening to 3 Feet High and Rising, their first tape that we had, and listen to Potholes in My Lawn as we drive back from our town of Lompoc. Shout out to that town. And we were driving to Gaviota, which was about 40 miles away, where we lived on the side of the freeway in a mobile home. And, when my brother and I would be driving, we'd be listening to that tape. And I remember Potholes on My Lawn right before we got to Buellton. And it just brings back so many different memories. I was just listening to some 70s music the other day, and it brought my dad back to me, you know, because he it's what he listened to and what he loved. And same thing with my mom. I just heard Maxwell Ascension, and I just heard that song. Don't ever wonder. And I remember my mom made me a mixtape, and that song was on it. And, you know, it brought back the memories of my mom and the love that she had and all the things that she, I mean, just the funny things that she would do and the joy that was in that woman. So absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that.
No. I think, you give a tape to somebody who's born after 1998 or something. And they'll think, what is this? You know, what do I do with this? You know, I showed a VHS videotape to one of my daughters a few months ago, and they're going, what do we do with this, Dad? Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Anyway, I remember going to I was in Chicago once, and Maria and I went clubbing with some friends of ours that we were visiting. And we went into this club, and it was sort of an indoctrination, really, into American club culture, I think, at that time, because Billy Idol came on. And yes. It was such a great night. But this particular song came up, and then there was some particular lyrics which weren't actually the lyrics of the song, but the whole crowd just sang it. And from then on, whenever I hear this Billy Idol song, I inadvertently, it depends if the girls are in the car, but I say this because the lyrics are quite rude.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Yes. I know the exact lyrics and the chant, man. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Anyway. I love that. And I think with music as well, it's very evocative, isn't it? You know, with some holidays that we've been on and stuff, and it just brings back lots of memories. There's one, some people are very, they're maybe might read a book and that reminds them of what they're doing. But music for me is what it is. So what have you got planned for the future?
Well, I'm going to take my kids to school today. I love that. I love being able to spend some time with them. And, you know, I think that, you know, really for me, and this was something that my dad used to say all the time, and I never understood it. And now I do. And he said, I'm going to do whatever God has me to do at that particular time. And for me, I've had to become okay with that. I mean, there's some days, Steve, there's a couple of days a week that I do hair, and I get a chance. I'm very fortunate to be able to take care of the guests that I get to take care of. There's days where I'm completely dad. Like today, I'm going to be completely dad. I'm taking the kids to school. I'm picking them up. We've got football games. And then there's days where I'll fly out, which I will in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to Sundance to speak to a financial convention. And, I get a chance to do that, and I'm going to be all in there. There's going to be hopefully a time, because my wife has been away for about 4 days, 4 or 5 days, that I'm going to be completely husband, and we're going to have a date night. On Saturday night, we're going to have a family date night, but I think hopefully on Sunday, we're going to have a just her and I date time. And so I just truly, truly, truly want to be present every single place. And I want to make sure that in my past, what I did, there was times where what I did really defined my identity in myself, not for other people, but for myself. And what I want to make sure of is that, and people ask me this all the time, they're like, so what do you do? And I said, well, I make people happy. And that's simply it. Whether I'm speaking to a large crowd, speaking to a small crowd, I'm on the podcast, I'm doing hair, I'm, you know, a husband, a father, I simply want to bring joy into people's lives and shine the light that I've been gifted. And if I can give away that gift, I find that magic happens, and I end up in places that I never, ever in my wildest dreams could imagine that I could experience.
Oh, that's so awesome. That is so awesome. I'm very conscious as well, obviously, about your time, and you're going to be doing the school run very soon. But what I'd like to do is just ask you a couple of things, really. First of all, and this is something that you did to me, and so I'm sort of reciprocating. So I've got two daughters, Sophia and Olivia, and I wondered if you could give them a couple of pieces of advice that's going to help them on their journey. So Sophia's going to be leaving university this year, mm-hmm. and Olivia's going to be starting university this year. And I just wondered what sort of things you would impart some wisdom on them, because they never listen to their mum and dad, but they'll listen to Kelly Cardenas. You know what I mean?
So Sophia and Olivia, am I correct? Yeah. Okay, so Sophia and Olivia, what I want you to know is, first of all, your dad's a phenomenal human being. I haven't got a chance to meet your mom, but I'm sure she's incredible if she would be willing to hang out with this guy. So listen to them, you know, connect with them, and realize that, you know, in the last 3 years, 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, I lost my mom and she went to heaven. And probably 3-4 months ago, I lost my pop and he went to heaven. And so I want you to soak up every single moment that you have with them, because all the things that you think that they repeat over and over again are going to be the things that you wish you could hear, and you can hear just one more time. And I wish I could spend time with my pops, and I wish I could spend time with my mom. Although I get to, when I go to the beach, when I write, and I write letters to them, and but make sure that you soak up the time now. On the ground level for you guys in life is number one, again, what my mom told me, make sure that you know that you're awesome. Disconnect yourself from any accomplishments, accept your greatness. And when you accept that greatness, then you won't accept anything into your life that's contrary to that greatness. Number two is you're beautiful. Not just you are beautiful. I haven't met you, but I'm sure that you're absolutely beautiful physically, but know who you are on the inside. And when you know who you are in the inside and you're beautiful, it doesn't matter what you ever look like, what you wear, what you do, that you are in love with that part because you are made in the image of a perfect God. And so when you do that, then you'll step away from what the world tells you that you need to be and take away three words from your life, shoulda, coulda, and woulda, and replace it with shit. Maybe it didn't work out, or maybe it did. So what? Let's continue to move on and have a great attitude about it. And the last one that is that you can do anything that you put your mind to, but just because you can do it, it doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it your purpose. Lock into your purpose and realize what my pop said. And he summed it all up like this. You are the greatest, Sophia and Olivia. You are the greatest. So please, 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 with all my heart, just act accordingly.
Wow. That's like unbelievable. I feel really emotional, actually. That is amazing. Thank you so much. I'm gonna have to put that on a special mix and send it to them on a WhatsApp message. And you know, that's so inspiring. Thank you. Oh,
that's well, so Steve, cool. Steve, what I want you to realize, man, is that, and this is what people ask me all the time. When I go and speak to companies, they're like, "Okay, what's your premise? What's your thing?" My thing is building people, and so the way to build people is most of the time people are walking around. They're walking around pretty wounded. Most of us are. But if we can realize those three things, then we start to grab a hold of life. We start to love it because most people try and get us to do something as opposed to, you know, helping to heal who we are at that particular time.
Yeah, absolutely. This is my last question, because I know you've got to go, and I'm sorry. Sorry, kids, if they can hear. You know, optimism is my thing, right? I'm all about it, and I'm like an optimist magnet. If there's anybody in the room who's an optimist, I'm there. You know what I mean? I just wondered what's your definition of optimism?
I think it's back to what my mom said, you know. Shit. Like, you know, I think when you know who you are, you don't care where you are. You're okay with where you're going. And so when you know who you are, you don't live in the past. You don't live in the future because you don't care. That's already going to happen. Like all the great things, you know, speaking to 100,000 at one time is going to happen, Steve. That's going to happen. All the desires that I have, I know they're going to happen. All the things in my past, I'm not mad at, I'm excited about. And that allows me to sit right here, right now. And I believe when you're present, you can be optimistic. But when you're thinking about the past, you're going to beat yourself up for all the things that you should have done. When you're in the future, you're going to think that, wow, I need to be doing all these things and I haven't been able to do it. And that's that comparison. But when you sit right here, you're just like, shit, like, I am here with Steve right now, and I get the opportunity to be on one of the greatest podcasts in the world and have a friend for life. And whatever comes from that, I'm good, because I already know that this is going to happen. I already know that this has happened. I can't change this. And you can't stop that from ever happening, because I know it's coming. So be right here and enjoy this moment. That's optimism.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. So when we first started our conversation, the light behind you on the curtains, it was very dark, and now it's a bit lighter. it's got a lot lighter. So I know you've got to take the kids to school, which I love. I love that fact. That's one of the reasons why I started my own business. I can't thank you enough. I know that your career is just going to get stratospheric. And it's going to be soon. I know that. I really want the opportunity to meet you one day, and hopefully we can get that together. That would be an amazing, amazing time. thank you to your family for allowing you to get up early and spend time in conversation with me. And I wish you all the very best and huge success in everything that you do.
Steve, you're an absolutely phenomenal human being, man. I love it. I love the show. I love you, man. And I can't wait to be able to spend some time.
Oh, bless you. Thanks so much. And take care and don't stop being an optimist. Thank you for listening to today's show, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did chatting with Kelly. I couldn't do this without you. And the most impactful way to support the show is, of course, to download it and recommend it to your friends and family if you can. And also, please leave a review. The Optimist Tribe is growing, and I thank you so much for your support. I'll put Kelly's contact details on the show notes, and please reach out to him. He's such a great guy, even if it's to reminisce about the music that inspires or has inspired you. Was it De La Soul and Magic Number? Who knows? But take care, everybody. I appreciate the love, and I'll see you soon on the next episode.